Let's go. What's up, man? It's Nick from Big Something. We got the Wilmington show coming up. I'm fucking pumped. Royal Rumble's back, baby. We got everything lined up. Got the chairs, the tables, the sheetrock. Everybody's going through a table this time. Even you, buddy.
What is up, Frasco? Kyle Ayers here. You know that. Hopefully you program my name in your phone. Very hyped for the Royal Rumble Tour reunion. Super excited. One small caveat. My doctor said you are not allowed to throw me through any more tables. They said I got a concussion last time, which are bad, so I can't go through the tables anymore. I did forget a couple of my cousins' first names. It was that bad. I will not live as long as I would have had we not done the table thing. But that's okay, because it was fun, and I'm excited for the next show. I forgot where it is. I've been forgetting a lot of things. But anyways, bye.
And we're back. Andy Frasco's World Saving Podcast. I'm Andy Frasco. How's our heads?
You guys only saw
how's our minds?
Screen gaslights me all day long.
Oh, shut the fuck up, Nick. No, I don't. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
We have my co-host, Nick Gerlach. Hello, Nick.
Hey.
What's going on?
We're in beautiful Fayetteville,
where are
Arkansas.
We? We're in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
It is gorgeous here.
Yeah, I love Arkansas, right?
I am an Arkansas guy, I decided.
Why?
I like it. It's the Michigan of the South.
Why do you say that?
Okay, so I was thinking about this last night in Little Rock. We drove through Mississippi and the parts of Louisiana that aren't New Orleans on the way up here.
Yeah.
We've all been through Alabama, too. Arkansas hits a little different in those areas, even though it's in the South. There's a little, people here are a little more refined, maybe, a little more cultured, if you will. They're here to have fun, you know? Mississippi, driving through Mississippi, depressing, right? We're not stopping there in the tour, are we?
No, no, we're not.
Very depressing place.
I like it, though, but it's depressing.
Kidding. It's a joke. I mean, it's not the people's fault. They just, you know.
Oh, shit. I thought that was
dude,
a person.
Dude, that scared the hell out of me earlier.
Oh, fuck.
There's a mannequin up in this window in the lobby. If you're ever at George's, go up on the patio and look. It's really scary.
Did you like
anyway,
New Orleans?
Arkansas is great. Oh. It's like Michigan. Michigan's surrounded by a bunch of states that are not as cool as it, too.
I like Arkansas because there's 6 a.m. bars.
Yeah. Well.
Did you have fun at that 6 a.m. bar? I had a fucking blast.
I didn't go
blast.
Out of the gig. I'm avoiding that kind of thing.
Bullshit. You went
I
with...
I
you
had
went
one
out.
Drink. I had one drink.
You went out... Bo, how long did fucking Nick go out for?
He was out as long as us.
That's what I was saying. You
no.
Been at, dude, don't lie to my fans.
I was in bed at 4.
At 4?
Yeah. That's not that bad.
We got there at
I'm
two.
Allowed to go out.
That means you were drinking for
I
2 hours.
I had one drink for 2 hours, yes.
Well, how do you do that?
Because I'm just very good at self-control.
You need to teach me that.
I'm
I'll
the
just...
Michigan of this band. No.
I got kicked out of Michigan for not having self-control.
The state or the college?
A bunch of venues. Brewery.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah, they won't let me back ever
because
again.
You...
Because they thought I was, they called me a frat boy. Like I was crowd surfing.
It's so funny. Like you have this, like, that's a word that comes up with you. It's so funny because I kind of get why they think that from a distance, but you're like not like a frat boy at
no,
all.
No, not at all.
You're like totally different personality. You barely got into college. No, just kidding. Andy got into a lot of school. Your mother, when I met her in San Diego, she made it a point to tell me that you got into a lot of good colleges.
Really?
Yes.
My mom's a
it
shit.
It was actually really nice. She's like, isn't that, like, I did raise a child that was pretty smart. I'm sorry he's doing this, but he could have been this if he wanted. It was funny. It's just funny the way she was saying it. Your parents were a trip.
I was actually pretty proud of myself, too. Normally, I black out in New Orleans, and we didn't go out that much.
I didn't go out at all in New Orleans.
No, we were tired. Uh-huh. We drove 20 hours while your rock star ass flew
well,
to New Orleans.
That's because, remember, I wasn't originally on that gig.
Oh, so you just...
So I already had a flight to Little Rock, so I just switched it to New Orleans.
Unbelievable.
Also, I didn't feel like riding the fan for 20 hours. This is I had some work to do in Denver.
What do you... You didn't have any fucking work to do.
A little
do.
Bit. I did
what?
Record. For
what'd
a
you do?
I recorded.
Who with who?
I'm not going to tell you. It's a secret.
A.K.A.
Casey Russell.
Yeah? I like Casey.
Yeah, I play horns on his record.
What is it? Is it supposed to be a secret record?
No, I just was trying to be dumb. I like Casey Russell a lot. He came and sat in at the Ogden.
Yeah, we didn't... I guess we haven't talked about the Ogden show
that's why
either.
I was trying to... Huh?
Hey,
boom. All right,
you're
doing, segue.
You're a good co-host right now.
And the
now.
Michigan thing's going to come back up because we're going to Michigan next.
Yeah. So Denver turned up.
Denver turns up every time. That's what they do in Denver. That's why I moved there.
I've learned too. Like that really makes me. That show made me feel like this. I have a home base.
You have a crew with you, which I don't think you've had before.
I haven't had a crew. Yeah, shout out to Bo. Shout out to Bo
and Jason.
And Jason.
Having your own sound guy is fucking huge.
Yeah, and
it cuts out like so many steps of just setting up shit, and like he knows the deal. He can interface with the house guy.
Mm-hmm.
Bam.
I wonder if I was still doing coke. If I would have dealt with the van trauma.
Oh, my God. I would have probably gone home if you were probably doing coke like it seems like you used to do coke. I'd have been like, fuck it, I'm out of here.
Everything sucks.
And I'm on drugs.
And I'm on drugs. I can't sleep.
You got a good team, right?
I do have
and
a
And your
team.
Management's good?
Yeah, Brian's good.
And your agent.
And Rachel's good.
I really like your agent. Speaking of agents.
Repsy? Oh, wow. Come on. Come on with this. Come on, Nick.
I should probably start getting paid for this. Anyway, speaking of agents.
Repsy, don't let them try to do a sidebar. What if, like, all of a sudden you go solo like Tupac and, like.
Repsy. The Nicholas Gerlach Cult Podcast brought to you by Repsy. I am looking for a title sponsor. For
Floyd,
me.
Get up here.
No.
Come here, Floyd.
I don't want him.
Come on, I
want
to talk to Floyd.
He's got to go potty.
Oh, you don't have to do shit, Floyd. Come on. I get one more week till you go
Repsy.
Home.
Repsy.
You say, fuck. You said. Floyd didn't want to play the Midwest, so hey, stay, Floyd.
Don't just hit buttons.
Don't just hit buttons.
You are a 53-year-old woman.
Here, sit down. Here, give him the mic for a second. Give him the mic.
What are you drinking? Blue water?
Is what
that
is
from the
it?
Toilet?
It's electrolytes.
Ooh.
Looks like Windex.
Aren't electrolytes.
Isn't it? It definitely looks like that. I feel like I drank Windex.
Aren't electrolytes just salt?
No.
I think they are.
I don't think so.
Floyd, we're worried about you.
Really?
This is why we wanted to talk.
What's going on right now?
I'm not worried about Floyd at all, actually.
You know, we had the talk 3 weeks ago. You were partying a little too heavy on the IPAs. Now
I don't think I was around for this one.
Oh, this is he was partying, not going to sound checks.
Oh, now, you missed a sound check?
What are you talking about?
Excuse me. When I mean sound checks, not going to shows. You know, because he doesn't want to deal with the band every day. I get it.
What are you talking about? Help me out.
Are you talking about when he left us in San Francisco?
When he left us in San Francisco.
Don't you?
Oh my God.
That's a moaning sound. Stop.
He left us.
Don't touch
San
anything.
Yeah. You're like a child,
Floyd. But you've been not going to bed the last 3 days.
Yeah, you need to get to bed.
You're not Sean Eccles.
Bedtime, buddy.
We need you sleeping.
I went to bed.
No,
every night.
No, you didn't.
You fell asleep. There's a difference.
I guess. All right. Like hanging out at what was that place last night?
We don't need to
Midtown.
Say
Midtown.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. You had a blast.
Did you have a good time?
I had a blast.
Am I not allowed to have a good time?
People kept giving me dirty looks.
You could have a good time.
I kept getting dirty looks for wearing my mask.
I just saw Floyd. It really felt like Berlin in there. He was just in the front. They were singing like fucking.
That band was kind of good for a
Violent Femmes or something. I just see him doing his fucking hippie wave.
Bunch of songs you don't know that are like extremely like well
known. The way you violently.
It's like really well known music, and you're like, ugh, it's just like your indie crap.
Hold on, Floyd. This isn't your podcast.
No, it's a Nirvana.
You invited. I told you not to invite him over here.
Floyd, no, seriously. Come here. Come here. Sit down.
Sit your
down.
Fucking ass down,
sit
Floyd.
Down.
That's your
Let's
boss.
Talk. Let's talk.
I mean, have a seat.
I know you're going away for a couple weeks.
You are?
He's leaving us. He's leaving us after.
I'm building a house.
He's building a house in Nantucket.
Or do you have like?
Yeah. Well, no. I'm doing the electrical work.
Okay, when are you leaving the
store?
Well,
hold on, backtrack. Why would anyone trust your ass with electrical shit?
Well, I guess it's my place, so it's, we'll see if it works.
Hold on, are you just like YouTubing videos? How to?
No, I'm working with someone that's a licensed electrician.
Hey, I have a question.
So how long does that take?
When are you leaving tour, though?
He leaves in Cleveland. He's leaving after Cleveland.
Fuck you, man. Fuck you.
Okay, well, this has been fun. Just, you know.
Right,
you blew my good...
Fucking hate on me?
Whatever.
Stop with the moaning sounds. This is a professional podcast.
Yeah. We have...
Let's see if you know anything about Repsy. Let's see if you could do the Repsy plug. What do you know about Repsy?
Repsy is... They...
Oh, my God. He's blowing
This is why he never listens to my podcast. He never supports anything.
No, I fast forward through these parts.
That's your fucking boss.
Hold on a second. Repsy.
Do the Repsy
plug. Okay, Repsy. If you're a band and you want to get gigs,
okay, all right, you're getting.
Is it like you can pay them? No, they
no,
take a
no,
cut.
No,
they take a cut.
No,
they take a cut. They find you gigs?
They find you gigs.
Wait. Is it like, remember Sonic?
No, no, no. Go to soundcheck. All right, we're done here. Thank you. Thank you. Give it a thank you.
Thanks,
all right,
Floyd.
You got one more
tell
shot.
Me what it is. Tell me. You tell me.
Repsy is an online booking agency. It's basically like a consulting company where if you have an agent, they don't take a cut. You could put you could put your band profile on their page and you could get shows. You need the help. You might as well get Repsy because people are stepping on each other right now. There are 6 shows in New Orleans when we played.
Here's the thing.
Will they book a tour for you?
They'll try.
Here's my only concern with Repsy.
What?
I don't want to pay them and my current agent when I book a gig.
Another lob ball. Another fucking love ball. Thank you.
Let me cook.
Bye. Floyd, have fun in Cleveland.
Hey, Chris, just
don't talk to me for 7 days, okay? Because I need to mourn this.
Chris?
We're going to miss you, but don't.
Shut up.
Chris, go take a piss.
Chris, just go ahead and cut from the first time you hear the word Floyd to the last time you hear the word Floyd.
Sign up for Repsy.com. If you have an agent, they do not take a cut. I'm talking to you DJs. I'm talking to you comedians. I'm talking to you bands, solo artists. If you juggle, fuck it. Put your profile on there. You do hot dog eating contest, fuck it. Repsy will book you. Let's go. So shout out to Repsy.com for sponsoring the podcast. All right. Speaking of Michigan, where are we going next week?
Grand Rapids.
We're going to Grand Rapids.
Which apparently the only venue we're allowed in Grand Rapids.
I could go to Detroit. They don't
intersection.
Care. They don't care about my craziness out there.
Like, what do you mean they banned you? Like, they called your agent and said never
play? He will never play here again.
Because you did what? What'd you do?
I crowd surfed.
That's what you do.
I know, but like...
They hired you, right?
They didn't want me to crowd surf. They said it was a safety protocol.
Oh, but you did it anyway after they told you not to?
Yeah, and I was like...
Andy.
I was like, kind of bitching. I'm like...
Andy.
I don't drink fucking IPAs. I don't get the idea of these, like...
I don't really like them either.
You know, like, I'm not talking shit about people who... Breweries. Like, I love breweries, but like... You know, just hook me up with some Jameson.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't want to be chugging IPAs and have acid reflux.
Here's the thing about playing a brewery.
What?
They have to keep those places incredibly clean.
Mm.
They always have they can be stale.
Well, that was the wrong... No, that's the wrong one. They shouldn't have booked me then.
Yeah.
I'm not a clean guy. When I'm on stage, I'm spraying beer everywhere.
Look them up, you know?
Yeah.
You know what you booked.
Do your research,
well, who else
founders.
Would ban you anywhere else in the country?
Yeah, I was banned by when we played in Salt Lake City.
Oh,
that guy,
room?
I had a stateroom. I had to send him flowers for 3 years saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
What'd
I'm
you do
sorry.
There?
Smoked a joint on stage.
God damn it.
And I think I did a big old line of coke in the green room, and I think I just left the remnants.
Mm.
I also was talking
about... I'm so
glad
I didn't know you 3 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, I was pretty wild. No, I'm better now.
Very,
but
seems like a frat boy to me. Got him. That's called a callback, people.
Oh, my God. We're over this.
A professional.
All right. We got to tell the shows because we have Moon
Detroit.
Taxi. What do you, okay, let's see if you know the dates this week.
Okay.
Where are we playing Tuesday?
Grand Rapids. Detroit.
On Wednesday?
Buffalo.
Thursday?
Then we jet on down to Covington.
Nope. Oh, wrong.
Pittsburgh. Then down to Covington.
Yep.
Then up to Cleveland. Then a few days off.
What do you want to do in Cleveland? Can we look at like LeBron statues? Do they have any?
Yeah, I love Cleveland sports teams.
I do too, but I heard Cleveland's a shithole.
It's not a shithole.
No?
That's what people who have never been to Cleveland say about Cleveland.
Why do people... Why? Okay, give me this.
Every city has...
Why is Cleveland have such a bad rep?
Well, one time the river caught on fire there. Remember that in the 70s?
What? No.
Just a Rust Belt city. People just... Probably from fucking people one city over talking shit. Who cares? Every city has a shitty part. Every city has a good part. You know what I mean?
Well,
if you only watch The Wire, you'd think Baltimore's the worst place on earth. But, you know, it's actually a nice city.
It is a good city.
Oh, really? Oh, great. Well, good stuff, guys. Very pro.
I guess that's the cue.
Very pro.
I think they know that we're doing podcasts now, and they're like...
Who's on the pod today?
We got Moon Taxi.
Oh, I love those guys.
I
know them.
It was fun. We played with Mempho Fest of them. They're big Howard Stern fans.
I used to play saxophone with them sometimes.
Really?
I have sat in with them a bunch. And my old band, Cosy Sweater, we did a whole run where we opened for them.
Yeah, I think we might go on tour with them for a couple weeks.
I love those dudes.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Killing band.
They're fucking badass.
Great songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
Hot guys. Yeah. Very hot.
So come out to our shows. Come see Nick. You've been killing the opening
set. Oh, man. I think I've been doing great, actually.
Yeah. Your new songs are getting better.
Yep.
I think you just got to play them more and just
it's a process.
Yeah, it's true. I'm trying out new shit on this yep. run.
I like your new Jimmy Buffett song.
Oh, thanks.
It does sound like a little bit like a Jimmy Buffett. That's not an insult. He's a very successful.
I'm clapping
songwriter.
For you. Oh, okay. That was like that was good.
Well, some people will get mad if you compared him to something, but it's like he sold a ton of records.
I don't get why people get mad when
who gives a fuck, man.
Who gives
be
a
compared.
Fuck?
Be compared.
Be compared. It's good that you're getting compared to shit.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I compared you to a very successful songwriter with millions of fucking sales. I'm sorry.
I think, why are people so insecure
about
that?
No one's that unique. There's like 18 different kinds of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It ain't that deep, people. You got two arms and two legs, and you say dumb shit all the time, just like everybody else.
Wow, so motivating to finish
anyway,
off.
Anyway, I love Moon Taxi.
Yeah, they're good. So they're going to be on the show. We got Wes and Tommy from Moon Taxi.
Who?
Wes and Tommy.
Oh, man. Well, I love Wes. That's a keyboard guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're good people.
He has a solo. Did he talk about his little solo record he did?
No.
Oh, but he did a solo EP. It's good.
They love Howard Stern, though, so we talked
God
about
damn it!
I think they want us. No, it's fine. We got to end
we
this.
We are almost fucking done.
All right. I got to go to sound check.
I love you, Moon Taxi.
Go enjoy Moon Taxi.
I miss
Taxi.
You.
Have a great day. Hey, motivational
for
speech
her.
During Black... What's this song called?
Back in Black!
I don't know. It's AC/DC.
I
all right.
I fucking don't like AC/DC. Let's
no?
go.
All right, we're out of here.
Dumb. Let's go.
Okay. Enjoy Moon Taxi. I got a sound check. I love you.
Bye.
Have a great week. Be good to each other. Be good to your neighbor. Tell Floyd why he's leaving the tour and give him shit
fuck
about
Floyd.
It. But we can't wait to have Chris, though, because we love Chris, too. All right. Goodbye, Nick. I love you, America. And stay happy. Stay inspired. I love you. I love you. We're in this shit together. Keep fighting the good fight. We're going to follow these dreams together. Let's fucking go. Now I got to go rock out to Fayetteville, Arkansas. I love you. Bye. All right. Next up on the interview hour, we have Wes and Tom from Moon Taxi. Yes. Hey, Chris, play some Moon Taxi while I pimp these guys out. Moon Taxi, awesome band. We played with them in Memphis Fest. We played with them a couple years ago at Gasparilla Fest. But this was the first time we really had a conversation and got to know them. They're big Howard Stern fans. They kind of did the same route we did in the beginning years where they kind of played all the SEC college towns and whatnot and was going doing their thing. And then they took a couple years to make a record and kind of changed their sound a little bit. And then they just started blowing up. And I'm really proud to be their friends, and I think you're going to enjoy this interview. It gives a good insight on, just developing a band and pushing hard through all the outcomes to keep following the dream. All right, guys, enjoy Moon Taxi.
But where would I begin? Because I sink when I swim, and I lose when I win. How do I keep it together with a hole in my
how you may have inspired that.
Oh, Tom and Wes, how you doing, boys?
Hey, Andy.
Good, Andy. How are you, man?
I'm good, dude. Just trying to survive this music industry. Well, how about y'all?
Same thing.
Hey,
man.
Same, yeah.
Tell me that
it's
story.
Coming back.
It's coming back.
We're coming back. Yeah.
Tell me that story. Tell the audience that story. You guys wrote a song at my party.
Well, so I went out there with my friend Max. We went out there to play golf at this really nice course called Ballyneal with Don Strasberg, who you probably know Don.
Yeah.
And we went out there and played with him, and then we had two more days off from Denver. We wanted to go see Street Cheese Incident, so we went and saw Street Cheese. And after that, we wound up at your dance party.
Yeah.
We had just missed the dance portion of it.
Oh, shit. And I was already high as shit on mushrooms, so I didn't even recognize y'all from Moon Taxi. Yeah. We were, like, talking. I'm like, dude, God, you guys look so familiar. And then, like, at the end of the night, I was, like, just... someone told me, dude, that's Moon Taxi. I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, I didn't even realize, dude. How y'all doing?
Well, yeah,
good, man.
Yeah, how's it been? How's quarantine? How's being dads? Give me the whole lowdown.
I'll let you weigh in on the dad's portion, Wes.
Yeah, well, as of 5:17 this morning, we have one more Moon Taxi baby in the fold.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah. So Tyler, so that's number 7 of the MT babies. Tyler had his daughter, Camila, this morning. There's second. He's got a 2-year-old named Isla. I just had my second on September 19th, so just about 3 weeks ago. And it's crazy. Spencer was the first to have a couple kids, and it wasn't until late 2019 that I had mine, and that just started the barrage of children. We went from 2 Moon Taxi kids to 7 within, you know, a couple years. So we've been getting busy.
All of a sudden, everyone's just coming.
They call them, I guess, children of the corn, like children of the quarantine.
Children of the moon, I think.
Or the moon. Yeah, exactly.
What's it like being a dad and having to travel all the time?
Man, I'm new to it because I had my first, like I said, in late 2019, and then everything shut down.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were all, you know, Trevor had his in December last year. So we were all very, you know, able to help our wives. We were at home. We weren't on the road. So this is kind of a new thing. Fortunately, my wife had her mom in town for a while. It takes help to answer your question. I mean, it's not something you can do or your wife can do on her own. You got to have family close or at least friends that can come help out, or you just, you know, hire a sitter, whatever it takes. It takes a village.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, you know, we've kind of gotten to that point in our career where we're not torn for, you know, months on end, like we probably used to do a decade ago. So we're kind of picking and choosing the right routing, and our management and agent has been really helpful with that. They're awesome. So, it's not too strenuous. We get to go home quite a bit. We're home most of the time during the week, which is good. And, you know, we kind of have found the best markets for us, and we kind of continue to go back to those. So, everything's just done in a very efficient way. So we're able to balance, you know, home life and road life.
Do you think, do you like that? How does it affect routine for your band if you guys are just playing on the weekends and stuff?
It doesn't affect it too much. I will say, I think all of us have really learned time management. Especially after having my second one these past 3 weeks, it's like, okay, you have an hour, you need to finish the bridge of this song or whatever it might, you know, you crank it out. I mean, you utilize every little minute of your spare time, because, and you know, you're like, I'm going to shower from 105 to 110. I'm going to, you know, get the Logic session open. I'm going to have the drum sounds by, you know, it's just very regimented. It's like freaking military level preparedness and stuff. So, and Tommy here does not have kids, and he's just kind of living the bachelor life. So it's a completely opposite schedule for him, but I can only speak to, you know, what the fathers in the band are probably going through.
Well, let's talk to the bachelor. Are you getting bored out there? Tom can't play as much.
I'm not getting bored. No, I'm not getting bored at all. I'm actually busier than I've ever been. So, you know, I had a breakup back in May, and
what happened?
And we owned COVID happened, and it just wasn't right. You know, just it's there's a lot to it. There was no something that happened. But you know, that's just the way the world works. And, so I bought a new house, and buying this house was a lot. And then, you know, moving into it basically from scratch was a lot too. So like, you know, I get here and I don't really have a whole lot of furniture to fill it out. So it's like, okay, now what do you do? Well, you gotta get a couch. You know, and then I'm like, what do I do? Like, I've never like furnished a place before. So then I'm just texting all my girlfriends and like, hey, okay, what do you do here? I need your help.
Yeah.
And like they'd come over and they'd be like, okay, this is where you should put your couch. You know, this is where you should put your coffee table and all that kind of stuff. And I'm still trying to work on it. And I just, you know, us coming back home for just a few days, and you know, we just saw you at Memfo.
Yeah.
And I've had like 3 days here to kind of look at it and work on it and figure out what else I need, but it's getting there.
What about Tommy bought Danny Clinch's record player.
Really?
I did. So yeah, I did.
Fuck yes, the band.
Yeah, I did buy that. It's right
there.
Hell yeah. You're like, fuck the bed. Fuck the TV. I need a record player. It's the first
I had a bed. I did have a bed. That's great.
What was the hardest part about being alone during the quarantine?
I went alone during the quarantine. This is all post-quarantine.
Oh, so you had your chick and then it just didn't work out?
Yeah. It's kind of one of those things. It's like, you know, you end up around each other so much, either you're going to get closer or you might get, you know, pushed away.
Yeah, you might hate each other.
Thing.
Yeah, it's like...
It wasn't even like that. It was just like, you know, it's just kind of... This does, you know, it's not really how it should be.
Yeah, that's basically my question is like... You guys had this life before quarantine. You know, maybe the dads in the band have already been settling into this idea of, you know, being at home more. But like, you know, I think it's got to be hard for the mind for people. Like when you base your relationships on you just being on the road all the time, and then all of a sudden, bam, we're with each other every day. It's got to be how hard was that for both of you guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I'm a super social person. I like to go out and I like to do things. I'll, you know, hang out with my friends and then also like play shows. You know, it's like I just love the idea of being around a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so when we're shut down, and you know, I can't be with my friends, I can't play shows. You know, and I'm basically locked away in a house. I domesticated. I learned how to cook and I started exercising and, you know, made my bed every morning and, you know, all the kind of things that I think, you know, most people do, all the time. And so now, you know, I still keep a lot of those habits. But I'm also, you know, excited to be able to go out and play these shows again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was important for me too. I really got into cooking. I think it was probably good for creative people during the quarantine to try other stuff. You know, I think it was probably, you know, because they were locked inside, obviously you can make music and do that. But, you know, since you're not playing shows, you have all this extra time to learn something else. For me, it was also learning parenting. Fatherhood was kind of my big project in quarantine. But yeah, cooking. And I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of friends of mine like Tommy who, you know, now can cook a really great dinner for themselves, you know, and host a party. And, you know, it's so these kind of little skills that you didn't know that you had, you know, you kind of learned your way around them in the quarantine, which is, I think, is super cool.
What about flaws that you found out you had when you're by yourself?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
No. I'm sure there's a few of those.
What do you got? What did you realize about yourself that you're like, ooh, maybe I should work on that?
I'm a little messy. I'm not going to lie. I kind of leave shit laying around that I probably shouldn't. I need to put the towel back on the rack after I use it, not on the bed. You know, just stuff like that. Just trying to be and I just thought, can I just do that? You know, I don't know. Yeah. Trying to be a little more clean, a little more tidy, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the same thing as like, you know, it's kind of what we just said. It's like, you know, that's a good question. Cause like you identify these flaws. You're like, okay, cool. What are you going to do about it? And if like, for me, like I used to sleep a lot later. I get up pretty early now, and get a lot more done throughout the day. You know, not knowing how to cook. I mean, I bake bread now. You know, I can bake a loaf of bread. It's just ridiculous.
Hell yeah. I'll clap to that. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go, boys.
Yeah, I mean, it's stupid. I actually really want to bake a loaf today. I just won't have time to eat it because we have shows tomorrow and Saturday.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
How, you know, going back to that question about getting the band, you guys used to hit it really hard, right? How many shows were you doing in the beginning years?
There was a time where we would do around 160 or so a year, I think, which is a lot, you know, and then you add in travel days and you're gone. I mean, the longest tour I think we did, we affectionately called Disaster Tour.
What happened?
We call it that because, well, nothing happened really. It just, nobody came. I mean,
yeah, like, Andy, this is eventually going to be a book, The Chronicles of Disaster Tour.
Hold on, what happened? What, you're just nothing? You guys weren't popping yet? What year was this?
No, we were not popping yet. Yeah,
2010.
Yeah,
no, yeah, we weren't pop. We didn't have any business touring the country. This was pre-Spotify. I don't think the word was out about us, and we had a, you know, very naive, young, nice agent, fresh out of college, that was kind of given the keys to the castle at this agency and, you know, kind of just booked us where at any place that would let us play. And even, it didn't matter if it was, oh, let's play in Ithaca and then go down to, you know, Richmond the next day. It's like, okay, we're in a van, dude. This is like 9 hours. So the routing was whack. It was very exhausting. People weren't really showing up. I remember one venue we played in South Haven, Michigan. We pulled up and on the marquee, instead of it saying Moon Taxi tonight, it said venue for sale. And we thought, oh, this isn't good. You know, is this place even like functioning? But
yeah, nobody came to that one.
No one came to that. Yeah.
Except the opening. We had an opening band. We had an opening band. I remember I went and hung out with them afterwards and had a blast. yeah, I mean, like, just making whatever friends you can.
Yeah. Were you guys like surviving on the road, or were you like you guys had money saved up, or like, was it really that, was it hard? Like,
back then we were playing some frat parties and that would kind of load the tank a little bit. Mm-hmm. And let you take a risk. And some of those shows that we're talking about, you know, those were like, I think we'd get like $500 a night, you know, so yeah, that could keep you going. We'd all pile into one hotel room.
One hotel room. Yeah.
Five of us and our lighting director, Joey. We'd rotate who got to sleep and who got to share a bed. And then two people would sleep on the floor.
Why did you feel like a lighting director was important in the beginning years?
Great question, Andy. We're still trying to figure that out.
Well, no, to me, I mean, we bought these cool lights that were like, they were called hybrid something. They were LED with also like a, you know, a main beam in the middle, but they had these LED lights around the sides. It's kind of looked like flames shooting out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we had three of them and you had to have somebody to run them. And I think it just added to, you know, kind of set us apart for that level of a band, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
they
but I mean, who
like
cares?
Man, they look awesome.
Yeah. But I mean, it doesn't matter if no one's coming, you know. There's probably a lot
cool
of good pictures. Yeah. Yeah.
How
some good pictures of that.
How important is marketing, you know, and building this, you know, this mystique that we're a bigger band than you were to in the beginning years? You know, it feels like that's like half the battle in the beginning.
You know, so we were early on, we had a really hard time selling tickets in Nashville, right? We had our friends coming over, you know, to our shows and all that. And we were actually doing bigger numbers in like Birmingham and maybe Knoxville and Bowling Green or Spencer's Farm.
SEC school cities.
Yeah, Tuscaloosa and stuff. And so we decided, you know, we'll just take a break from Nashville, take a lot of pictures of these other things that are going on and post those. And, you know, then that's when I feel like the Nashville market kind of started paying attention, was when it looked like we were doing better elsewhere. People were like, what's going on here? What are these guys doing?
Isn't it weird how like I'm from LA, so it's kind of the same vibe. Like I didn't bring anyone to my fucking hometown until I was popping everywhere else, like in Kansas and shit. I'm like, motherfuckers, yeah, dude, like fuck off.
Right. Yeah.
Where are you guys from originally?
I'm from Birmingham.
Yeah, three of the guys are from Birmingham, Trevor, Tommy, and Tyler. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, and Spencer is from Bowling Green, Kentucky. So we all met at Belmont, though. Well, I met the guys at Belmont. Tommy and Trevor knew each other prior, and we all the band was formed at Belmont here in Nashville.
Yeah, I heard you guys were a college band. Like, you used to, like, back up rappers and stuff?
Yeah, that was – so – Trevor and I met Spencer the like first day of school at Belmont, right? We all immediately hit it off. And Spencer had just met these two rap guys who needed a backing band, right? And he'd started writing tracks for them. It's called Blaze and Knowledge. And we wound up, you know, playing a school showcase, which I feel like most of the school goes, it's probably a couple thousand people with them. And then we won that and we got to play at the Ryman and open for Eddie Money.
Sick, really?
No, no. Yeah.
Eddie Money?
Yeah.
That's the shit, dog.
Yeah.
Did you meet him?
No, we didn't meet him. I don't know that we were given the opportunity to. I was in a velour suit and I felt like I was just hotter than shit. I mean, I was like, I feel awesome. Like, just play the Ryman and I'm in a velour suit. This is the shit. Like, solid black. I was on a high, man. It was great.
So from being a college band, did you guys like quit school or did you guys graduate or what happened?
We all graduated.
Really?
One at a time. I don't think any of us graduated at the same time, like semesters apart.
So were you like, were you regionally just playing shows on the weekends? Like how'd you keep the band together while you were going to school?
So I was booking shows for us while we were in college. I'll never forget where I was the first time I got one booked in Auburn. That was our first like out of town show. And I was like outside some music class, waiting to go in. I finally get the email back saying, or the call, he goes, okay, here's the deal. We'll, book you at Coyote's for a guarantee of $300 versus 85% of the door and two hotel rooms. I'm like, holy shit. I wrote it all down. I'm like, okay, what? Thanks, man. And you know, set the date. And I was like, what does this shit mean? He's going to pay us $300. He's going to pay us to come down. This is ridiculous. And the only way to get in there was, again, it's that marketing kind of thing that we were talking about earlier. I kept calling this place and they said, we never heard of you. We won't book you. Never heard of you. We won't book you. Well, I had a bunch of friends that went to Auburn. So I had one of them go in there and just talk up the band to the bartenders. It's like, oh, have you ever heard of Moon Taxi? They're awesome. Blah, 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 blah. Next time I called, they're like, oh yeah, yeah. And that's when I got my first booking.
You know, it's
just some guerrilla warfare.
Dude, that's what I started doing too. It's like, I made up a name for my booking agency and I was like, I'm Drew Mitchell. I represent Andy Frasco. This guy fucking sells out everywhere. I'm
just of course,
like, just lying my ass off. But like, you just have to get your foot in the door. And once you're in, then you can kind of rearrange how you're going to do it. Like Wes,
right, you just got to get that history.
Yeah, totally. Like Wes, what was your part? What was your part in marketing or what was your part in the band earlier in the years?
I was the social media guy, and I basically made every one of our show flyers look like a Hooters calendar, just to try to attract, because it was pretty masculine music at the time, very proggy, so I was sort of going for that demographic. Some of those images were removed. They violated community guidelines, so that was kind of a bitch, but... yeah, I was early on kind of the social media guy. I've recently started to more so pass that torch to Tyler, our drummer. He's been really good at fan engagement, a lot better than I was at that. So that's been really good. But yeah, so I sort of, you know, did a lot of that. And, you know, we all sort of helped out on the road. We, you know, loaded. Going back to Tommy's thing about those lights, I just remembered we never bought, I don't think we could afford cases for them. So we had the boxes with the styrofoam every day. Yeah. It was like, you know, unboxing an Amazon package. It was like, oh.
So hold on. Backtrack a little bit. So you had to like, you roll it in there. Like it's like a garage sale.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Every show.
Yeah. Be careful with the boxes, guys. We need those.
Yeah. We need those boxes. Easy on the box, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
We returned them to Guitar Center after the tour, too.
Really?
Oh, I'm just kidding. We did not do that.
I would totally do that.
Yeah. Pretty brilliant.
That's pretty brilliant. What was your first travel vehicle like?
Oh, that was Barbara.
Tell me about her.
Well, Barbara was a basically like a conversion van. Like it was a big Dodge Ram, like conversion family van. The back seat folded into a bed. You push this lever and it would, you know, electronically fold into a bed. It had a TV with the VCR set, two captain's chairs, and then two captain's chairs up front, driver and passenger. And
it was great. It was perfect.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great van, with a tow hitch. Bought that from our buddy, Justin Hamill, who, works at a radio station here. And actually his dad. Barbara died in Birmingham, I think. She started having a really hard problem with the antifreeze, I think. Like there's some in these old vans, they have some pipe that goes all the way to the back for some reason for antifreeze, and that kept leaking, and then finally it was just too hard to fix. Sold her to a guy. Who drove in from somewhere in West Tennessee. I'm like, and he was so excited about buying it. I'm like, this guy wants this fucking thing. This is a piece of shit. And he was so excited about buying it. And we settled on $1,700 for him to buy it. And he shows up with like $1,550 in cash. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, you were over here yesterday and you said $1,700 bucks and you're going to short me $150. He's like, I got to have gas money to get home. I'm like, that's fine. You know, fuck it. And just sold it to him. Thinking, you're not going to make it home anyway, bro.
Oh, my God. So,
I mean, whatever.
What was the hardest?
Never heard from him again. He was so excited about that, man.
What was the hardest part about, like, do you remember a time in your career where, like, you guys almost, like, quit or gave up on each other?
Yeah, probably after Disastour. I remember, I think we were somewhere in Virginia and just at our absolute lowest, kind of talking like, Spencer, what are you going to do? He's like, I don't know. I kind of want to get into real estate law. What about you? I wanted to, you know, when those conversations started to creep in, like the plan B, you know, was rising into the conversation or kind of creeping into the conversation. That's when I think we, you know, probably had to look at what we were doing and how we were doing it, you know, make some managerial changes, some just general restructuring of the team. And really it was the thing that really was our guiding light, that there was the light at the end of the tunnel, was our album that we were working on throughout that Disastour called Cabaret, which took about 2 years to do. We tried live tracking it and it really wasn't hitting the right spots. It just didn't feel very cool. So we took 2 years to really get that album right and really hone in on our sound. And that like really got us through that whole dark period, was just, you know, just nose to the grind, working on songs, trying to, you know, just really put more emphasis on the songwriting and album production. Cause at that time it was, you know, Kings of Leon out. There was just like a whole wave of bands that, you know, weren't country, that were more alternative, that were sort of in our, you know, arena that were really blowing up. Yeah. And, you know, it was just MGMT, and you're like, just cooler production was sort of like, I guess because Spotify was starting to come out and music was more easily shared at the time. So you could get something that wasn't just commercial radio pop that could really take off. So that excited us. And, you know, that was a world we wanted to live in. We wanted to play Coachella. We wanted to, you know, kind of get a little bit more diversity, because the jam, you know, if you can go the grassroots jam touring route to build your brand, touche, hats off, that's amazing. But, you know, we wanted just a little more kind of we wanted to live in we didn't want to just pigeonhole ourselves in that world. And the music itself we were doing at the time, I don't think was super exciting for anyone in the band. We kind of wanted to be a little more experimental and have the songs, you know, cause there were just so many lyrics in our songs then. It was like, you know, just like there were no hooks. I mean, no one could really sing along. It wasn't very fun to play live and just have people sort of, you know, do the windmill. It was just like, this is not our scene. You know, we don't like this. So, it was really that album and making that album that kind of got us through that whole dark period.
Well, that's great. I mean, shout out for fucking being a perfectionist, guys. Hell yeah. I would have said, fuck it. We're going live. We're playing on, like, right. Bill O'Reilly. We're Bill doing O'Reilly, it live. Yeah. All right. So I got a couple questions about this is what I wanted to get to. Cause like, yeah, you were first like a jam in the jam scene in a way. And then, when you moved on to different, you know, different type of music, like, did you lose a lot of fans? Did they call you sellouts? Like, what was like going on through that while you're building your new fan base to the sound you wanted?
There was maybe a little pushback from some of the jam fans. There still is. We made the decision, and we still get crap for it about every day on our social media, to pull some of our early albums off of Spotify, because sonically they just weren't. It'd be a very random kind of fidelity in the mix of our other album, and the songs were just not really behind them. There's an early album, Melodica, that we kind of were like, it was just a total rebranding that we felt like we needed to do about 2011, 2010. And honestly, we didn't have that many fans to piss off. We might've had, you know, a few dozen in each market, you know, but they didn't really care. You know, and it's weird. I listened to an interview with Kevin Parker from Tame Impala. He's like, bands get shit when they change their sound so much worse than an artist. And when Tame Impala became just like, hey, it's Kevin Parker here. Like, this is my thing. He can kind of do whatever he wants. And it's this weird kind of unfair world that bands live in, where, you know, they're just so easily offensive to their fan base if they change their sound or, you know, have a little commercial success. But you know, we've enjoyed the ride. You know, we're just going to write songs and put out songs that we like, and we know that we'll be really good live. So we've at least kept that ethos the whole way through, whether the style may have changed.
And we still do a fair amount of jamming too.
Yeah, I watch your set in Memphis, and you guys are fucking shredding, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't just come to the show and quit telling us what to play. You know, it's like
right.
And Melodica is, you know, it's still on Apple Music, from what I know. Melodica and Live Ride, so both of those are.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, and for a while there, it was like, man, you guys pulled Melodica. I can't find it anywhere. I'm like, dude, go on iTunes, spend $9.99. You'll get all 16 tracks or whatever it is, including the didgeridoo solo. You can, you know, like, quit your bitching. It's all right there. Pony up $10.
Didgeridoo solo. It really is on there too.
There is.
Why do fans?
Amazon is what it's called.
Why do fans think they're entitled to what you should play?
I think they just want to be. I think they just feel like they're a part of it, mm-hmm. And I respect that and appreciate it.
Bit. I mean, you know, one of our favorite bands that we've toured with, and they're great people. I know you know them, Andy, are the Umphrey's McGee guys.
Yeah,
and you know, they've got such a devoted fan base, but man, they talk so much shit. I mean, it is, it's like the Howard Stern
fans.
They love the guy.
Yeah, they're fan base.
They just rip them apart. And their road manager and I were talking about, he's like, man, they're so dedicated, but man, they're just vicious sometimes. You know, it's like, I guess how it goes. I mean, when you have that community around, you know, your band, it's like a family. You know, if one family member's stepping out of line, or if song's too poppy or whatever, you're gonna piss some people off. I don't know. It's a weird
deal. I mean, there's Fish fans out there like that too. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing Fish at Bonnaroo, and I was going back to Nashville. I think afterwards, I was sitting in a hotel room waiting on my ride. I was talking to some huge Fish fan, and he was just like, yeah, I give that show a C-. I'm like, the fuck? Like, yeah. C-? That show was fucking awesome. What's wrong with you?
I went to the Fish show with this chick who's a mega Fish fan. They kicked into Susie Greenberg. She started screaming, no! Boom! I'm like, this isn't Maury. What is this? It was like so just militant. All of a sudden, I'm like, what's happening right now? It's like...
So funny.
Weird thing.
I think it's just, that's all part of the development when you're growing your band and you're having to open for all these different fan bases and stuff. And a lot of bands don't let us open for them, you know, like Umphrey's will, but like a lot of bands think we're just too wild and they won't let us open for them. So it's like, I don't get that as much, you know. I had to like kind of do the grassroots thing and just like, you know, play every SEC school. I remember you guys. We'd always used to play George's Majestic, and it always felt like you guys were playing there the night before in Fayetteville,
Arkansas.
Yeah, we always
missed you.
And I knew everyone kept talking about you guys, like, all because I did that same circle, Oklahoma State's, Fayetteville's, you know, the whole circle you guys were doing. What was the moment in your career? So after you took that 2 years to make that record, what was that big moment where you finally said, holy shit, this is working?
Definitely Bonnaroo 2012, right, Tom?
Yeah, 100%.
What happened?
That was kind of like all the hard work kind of accumulating into this one big set where all the work we'd done all around the Southeast, where we're doing, you know, a couple hundred people here and a couple hundred people there, and these different frat parties that we've been playing. All of a sudden, we get to our set. We get, you know, a great slot at Bonnaroo in that tent.
Thursday night, that was what we were supposed to do this year,
and it got canceled.
Oh,
yeah, see, dude, that's huge. Well, yeah. they'll book you next time. That's the slot, though.
Yeah,
because people are in there, they're fresh, they're still clean. You know, they're super excited to see some music, and you know, everybody was just amped up for a great show, and our turnout was, you know, about 5 to 10 times bigger than I thought it was going to be. Holy, I was expecting a couple thousand people and it was like 15,000. I was like, holy shit. Okay, well, put up or shut up. And we went out there and we just crushed it.
Yeah,
really lit the show. And after that, everywhere we went, we had people showing up.
It was
to this day,
anywhere in the country. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be Seattle. It'll be South Florida. Someone will go, I was at your Bonnaroo 2012 set, you know, and most of the time, I mean, we were the last band on the lineup. You had to get a magnifying glass to see our name. I couldn't believe we got the slot that we did as like low as they billed us. But it was fun. It was almost like we're not next to last. We're dead stinking last. Like we've got to, you know, climb this mountain, prove to our, you know, this prove that, you know, we're not just some, you know, Bud Light tent band that you'd never hear about again. Like we really wanted to prove our, you know, staying power. So we worked so hard on that set and we really, like Tommy said, we did smoke it. It was just a game changer. I mean, and we had just dropped that album Cabaret. So there's a little familiarity with some of those songs. So that felt good. And, you know, I think it was interesting because our manager who we were just starting to work with at the time was like, you know, I got you all that slot by basically saying, you know, Bonnaroo smack dab in the middle of all of these markets, all these SEC markets that come out to see these guys, and they're all going to be there. You'll have a lot of people there. It'll be a good, you know, so it was a really good sell. I'm you know, I don't even know that we'd be sitting here talking to you if we didn't have that slot. I mean, really? It was really, yeah, really.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really was.
What about guys on your side, like bands that were on your side besides Umphrey's McGee? Like, who are you looking up to throughout this progression?
The bands that let us open for him, there were few and far between, but Modest Yahoo let us do a lot of stuff. Our manager also managed him. And, you know, right after that tour, Modest took us out for like 50 dates or something like that, which is great. Yeah, it was great.
That was when he was popping too.
Yeah. And those shows were fun. Those guys are awesome. And he's a cool guy. And then we did another tour with him, I guess like a year later, maybe with him and Dirty Heads. And we've become good friends with those guys too. They were actually with me when I bought that record player from Danny Clinch. We were playing the same festival up there in Asbury Park, New Jersey. It's really fun to like, you know, like when you first start touring, you don't really have that many friends, right?
Yeah.
Like peers out on the road. And then for that matter, like friends in the different cities you go to. And then the more you do it and the longer you do it, the more friends you make. And so like, you know, we're going to like, we go to Columbia, South Carolina a few weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. We've got some friends there and maybe go get dinner with them or hang out with them after the show. Like that kind of stuff makes it all much better for me. And then making friends like Dirty Heads, you know, you play a festival and you see those guys and catch up. That's one of the best parts for me for touring.
What about you, Wes?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about all the friends we've made, you know, in those early years that we're still good friends with. It's great. I mean, yeah, we pretty much have got some friends or people we know. Tommy and I play a lot of golf.
Hell yeah.
So we'll go play golf. Yeah, we play a lot of golf. You play, Andy?
I'm not good, but I'm competitive as fuck. So yeah, I'd definitely play with y'all. Let's go.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Let's do it. Let's fucking
yeah.
go.
Dude, I'm in.
Yeah.
You guys will whoop my ass because you guys are probably, you know, seasoned. Do you guys go a lot?
Yeah, Tommy, you probably play, what, 2-3 times a week at least?
Yeah, I played a charity event for Habitat for Humanity 2 days ago with these guys who are they run the Nashville Speedway. They're doing a bunch of NASCAR stuff up there, and I was on their team. We did not win, but I did get closest to the pin on one hole, so I think I won, like, an iPad or something.
Hell yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know if I should accept it because, I mean, it is like a charity event, you know, so I'm kind of like, I don't want to, you know, accept a gift from a charity. I don't know. There's got to be. you know what I mean? I'm just like.
That's funny shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm like, no. Keep the money. Keep the money for this.
I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's like that same feeling you get like. I don't want to equate these two things in any way, but it's like, you know, you go to the zoo and you look at the animals, you're like, oh wow, that's great. I get to see the animals. But at the same time, you're like, hey, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, exactly. So. It's crazy, man. Like, you know, growing up in Birmingham, Were you guys close to like the drive-by trucker dudes or like Panic or any of those guys?
We don't know them. Their lighting director did that Bonnaroo show that we were talking about.
Oh, sick.
He did the lights for us. Yeah. He fogged the shit out of it. And the lights look great. Yeah. Anyway, that's about as close as we get to them.
What was the first time when you said before you're starting to do like backtracks and stuff, how hard was the transition of going into backtracks from being a full band, live band?
It took a while. I mean, for a while we tried to do it with just, you talking about backing tracks that are drummer triggers.
Yeah. Yeah. The trigger. Yeah.
Yeah. We tried to do it with monitors for a little while. That was kind of a disaster. I remember Dave Shaw talking to him about it. He's like, dude, you all have to get in-ear monitors. You're in the business of sounding good. You know, it's what you got to do. I remember him saying, hey, you're in the business of sounding good. I was like, that's pretty damn good, Dave. I like that.
He's really smart, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, once we made the transition, you know, our crew doubled. I mean, we then brought out a sound guy, a monitor guy. It was a good transition. I think we're actually more recently getting a little bit tired of it. I think our drummer feels like he's just playing along to a laptop sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's okay. Some of those sounds have their place. We were playing a show at the Caverns, and it was one of the first shows back down in Pelham, Tennessee. This was, I think, April this year, and it glitched up on us, and we felt very naked when the track kind of cut out, and our manager was like, guys, this is not the band you all are. You shouldn't have to rely on this. You're great players. You can build a nice big sound without tracks. So I think we're trying to sort of reevaluate that part of what we're doing and maybe, you know, do more live tracking in the studio and just kind of very carefully pick and choose what we add. You know, because, I mean, it got a little too these past couple records. I mean, we love the songs, but I think in hindsight, some of the production may have been a little over the top because you get into a practice room and you go, what the hell do I play? Like, I find myself just playing pads. Tommy's just playing 808s. It's like, what is, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of tough. That's not who we are. Like, we love to rip, love to play. You know, Tommy was a music major. I've played my whole life. We all can really play. I'm not to toot our own horn, but, you know, that's something I think we want to probably bring back into the fold a little more and, you know, not turn into Fish where it's just 30 minute jams, but, you know, just bring a little more of a live presentation.
At the time, the argument for it was like, you know, it felt like we were competing with EDM. Right. Yeah. And they've got just so much shit going on all their tracks. And it's like, okay, well, how do we get bigger to get, on par with those kind of shows. And it's really like, that's actually not what we should be doing, I don't think.
We're going back on that.
I do love having a click in my ear because for certain songs, like, you know, now you can like have complete silence for a bar and then everybody comes right back in, you know, on the money, which is awesome.
Yeah, and it's got to be hard, too, because like you said, like it takes you 2 years to perfect these sounds and these tones on these records. Like you want to emulate the record as much as you can, you know? It's like it's got to be like a push and pull with that shit.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
You do and you don't. I mean, like, so like, yeah, like in our previous records, we would, you know, play them live before we went out and, you know, record like before we recorded them, like we'd play them as a band. And this last record, we did a lot less of that. So I think moving forward, we're going to do a lot more live playing together and hash it out so that the song feels live on the record, I guess. It's a little bit interesting.
Are you guys with playing less and playing bigger shows? Like I think of like arena shows and shit. Like it's got to be harder and more stressful to get that arena sound. Like that's why I feel like, you know, like the backing tracks and stuff makes sense when you're playing these fucking huge ass rooms where it's like you really got to fill out a big ass sound.
Yeah. Yeah, mostly in kind of the low end stuff for sure. Yeah. 808. That was the motivation too. We were playing bigger rooms and that was starting to affect some of the production. And now we've actually added on the road a saxophone player. You saw her the other night.
She is bad as fuck, dude. Holy shit, dude.
Shout out to Amber.
Dude, Amber, killing her.
Yeah, she's great. She plays with Trigger Hippie, you know that band?
Oh,
with,
no shit.
Yeah, Joan Osborne used to be in that band. But yeah, she's great. I think the word's kind of getting out about her. And, you know, hopefully we can hang on to her as long as we can. But yeah, she's amazing. So yeah, we just preferred some of these sounds because we went through a phase. I think it was like during Uptown Funk. We're like, oh, saxophones can be cool and on records. Wow, that's kind of novel. Yeah. So we put a shitload of horns on our Daybreaker album and Let the Record Play. And so, you know, live, I'll take a synth solo instead, but it's like, damn, this was really meant to be like that SNL sexy sax kind of vibe. So having her's been great because, you know, those are some of our fans' favorite songs, and to actually have sax live has been super cool. And it's just a great instrument to write little hooks on too. I mean, it's just a great, we just love having horns.
Yeah, what was your how did you meet her, and like when did you decide that was like a perfect fit for your band? Because she does feel like a perfect fit for your band, dude.
Yeah, she does. She was playing with this band called Luthi, kind of a funk band that we had out on the road with us for a while. And yeah, you know, she was sort of stealing the show with him, and we thought, well, maybe she could sit in. I think she sat in on a few dates. I know she did our New Year's Eve show that we did here in Nashville, 2018 to 2019, and just killed it. She's great at reading charts too. Super fast learner, great singer. And she's amazing at working remotely from home. We did a song called Mission, and she's got a great home recording rig, and it was kind of during COVID, so we didn't want to get together in person. So she sang on that, and it sounded great. And her voice, Trevor's got such a unique tone. It's kind of tough sometimes to blend other voices with his voice. So typically we just have him sort of harmonize with himself, but she slides right in. I mean, it's just kind of a godsend that she is, you know, sort of that perfect balance vocally with Trevor. It's a great blend. So, I don't know if she's going to join the band, but we're definitely going to hang on to her, as long as we can.
How hard is it to add new members to a band that's already like a self-sufficient machine?
With her, it's really easy because she's just such an easy vibe. She is just so chill. I mean, I don't know. West, I mean,
yeah,
she's just a good vibe. It's
A part of it too is kind of just being able to hang with us, which she does very well. We have just extremely bizarre senses of humor, and she's totally there for it. I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Give me a moment where maybe a joke didn't really hit.
Oh, I had a few years ago, and I don't think she wanted to hear about that. That didn't really land. Also, could you cut that out, please?
I'll cut it. I'll just bleep it. I just had a bleep, bleep, bleep.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I want to talk about like the first time you guys got syncs in movies and radio and video games and stuff. What was that like?
The first one was Cougar Town.
Yes, and you could not. So we posted about it. We're like, oh my god! We were so stoked. It was on this ABC show called Cougar Town, and I think Courtney Cox was on it. Busy Phillips,
she's
baby.
Lead, anyway, yeah.
So we all, you know, tell all our fans. We got our families watching, and you. We watched the whole episode and we all texted each other. Did this happen? Was it the wrong episode? Where was it? Spencer was like, you had to listen to the volume at 100%. And it was in the coffee shop scene. And it was about 8 seconds and you could hear a little banjo. It's like, okay, great. Yeah. So that's how this worked. It's not like boom, text, you know, it's like very, it can be very subtle.
My favorite one we had was on Elementary, West. We were watching the Super Bowl over at that girl's house, and we all, because the episode aired right after the Super Bowl several years ago, and we watched the whole episode. It's some Sherlock Holmes show with Lucy Liu in it, and the song starts creeping in. It's like they're solving the mystery of the case.
Yeah,
and I can hear it creeping in. I'm like, oh, this is fucking sick. And then all of a sudden, it just cues to the Brooklyn Bridge, the song's banging loud. I'm like, that was badass. Yeah. That one was, and we're all like cheering. Cool.
That was actually Modest Yahoo. That was Square Circles with Modest Yahoo on that track.
Yeah.
When you start getting into these, like, you know, like building movements for scenes and shit. Like, you kind of get addicted to it. Do you ever think about scoring a movie?
I would love to do that. That's a goal of mine. One day, I'm kind of working on some of my own songs right now and kind of trending in that direction eventually. But yeah, definitely. I think Spencer would like to do that too.
Yeah.
Spencer would love that. He's a big movie guy.
Do you guys all write individual songs and whatnot? Or you guys are like, when do you know when a song is good for Moon Taxi versus something that's good for you guys?
When Trevor sings on it is sort of the ultimate test.
Yeah.
You know, I in quarantine, I wrote some songs kind of just on my own and, you know, shared them with a band. They're like, yeah, that's cool, but we don't know if that's us yet. We ultimately, you know, Trevor needs to sing on it and, you know, get the key right, get the feel. I don't play guitar, so all my demos are super synthy and loopy and piano kind of driven, or keys driven, I should say. So yeah, ultimately that's kind of the test and, you know, we'll try to run it in a sound check. And if we feel like it could be good live, you know, that's a good sign. But yeah, it's ultimately if Trevor could sing it and if he can sell it and, you know, if he feels like he connects lyrically and so, you know, and even songs that does work out for hit that he does sound good on, ultimately they just, you know, it's kind of, where does it work in the context of the record? You know, there are just so many factors, ultimately.
You ever have a song? Yeah. You ever have a, because like you make these songs in the studio, right? Before, or do you try them out live before you hit the studio?
What we're trying to do now is just strip everything down just to acoustic and a vocal.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Andy, I just remembered. Tommy, I guess there's the new song, Step Into the Light, we've started to actually play at shows.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot
about
that. I
didn't think about that one.
So, yeah. Yes, to answer your question, sometimes on rare occasions, yeah, we'll try it out at a show.
You ever had a song where you thought it was the shit and it just bombed?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
What song was it? What day? Do you remember the show?
I mean, God, honestly, a lot of the times that we'll put out a record and it'll, you know, we could play a few singles from that and just nobody knows it. We've realized it takes fans a while. Even some of your biggest fans somehow like just completely miss that you put out records, or they just don't really learn them. So it's just this sort of, it's like a stink bomb goes off and you kick into a new song. It's like, damn, you know, they just kind of clear out, go get a beer, a general sour. I look into the crowd, like, are they feeling this? And without fail, someone is yawning every time I look in the
that's not true.
No, I swear every time. We go on late. I don't know who beats that, but I mean, even Morocco and some of our fan favorites in the early days, I mean, I'd be the same way if they're playing a song I have never heard. You know, you can't get terribly excited. So I mean, I don't know.
My buddy,
I sort of get it.
My buddy Neil Francis told me this one story where he's testing out a new soft song in this venue, and all of a sudden, like, it's really quiet, and all of a sudden, you just hear a Nitrous Tank go.
They had a tank in the venue. Wow!
Oh, it's just some outside fest, some like Hoedown festival. Like trying out some new stuff. You know, the crowd was light or something, and all of a sudden, like, such an emotional part of the song. All of a sudden.
Amazing.
It makes me get scared to play the vulnerable songs. Like, God, I love this tune. I love the lyrics of this tune. All of a sudden, they're just sucking nitrous.
Yeah, sucking nitrous.
Wow. Speaking of nitrous, let's talk about mental health. Do you guys suffer with anxiety or depression or any of that stuff?
Not really. I don't think. I can't speak for everybody else.
I probably get a little anxious here and there. You know, I think that the work-life balance that we've been able to achieve has probably helped our mental health tremendously. We're not, you know, we've been doing this. I joined the band in 07, you know, a long ass time ago, and I still feel fresh as ever. And I think that's because we don't let ourselves get burnt out. We are smart about our touring. You know, we try to maintain good relationships with our families and, you know, just general balance, I think, kind of keeps us all in check.
So do you think that's the goal, is to like to like not play as much, but like know your limits of how you guys react. Like I could stay on the road, but sometimes after like week seven, I start just like depleting.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah. And your shows, man, I mean, I don't know how you could do that every night. It is mind blowing, the energy. I mean, what if you can't shower? Like there are many venues, like you can't shower at. Do you just stink it up? How do you like, are covered in sweat
and beer and shit. Like, yeah. Like when we have like late night drives and shit and I'm like,
yeah,
I'm sleeping in my beer clothes. Yeah. It's it's not fun, but you know, it's for the better purpose. You know, we're all trying to bring music and, you know, I know how important music is to you guys. Been a band for a long time and us too. It's like, we're doing it because we know how powerful music is for people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
dude. And your shows, man, I got to say, we saw you. I don't even know that you were aware that we were there.
I saw you side stage.
No, I guess for real.
I saw you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I was like, yeah. That was when I first got hip to y'all. And I was like,
yeah. Okay. And to you, too. That we went and saw, I think we were playing an NHL All-Star game.
Yeah.
And you were playing a tailgate thing.
Yeah.
The day before.
And you guys showed up the day early. Yeah.
And we went over there. Yeah, I bought your... bought your sweatshirt with the golden retriever on it.
Oh, fuck.
And I get more fucking compliments on that than anything else. Everybody's like, oh my God, I love that. I'm like, it's a badass band. I'm telling you guys,
yeah. I think it'd be a great tour, you and us.
That'd be fun as hell. We've talked about that. We'd love to have you out, man. That'd be awesome.
We would do you justice. We'll hype up your crowd. We'll get it going. What? So I got a couple more. You got a little more time for me?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay, so like you said, like you were very male driven in the beginning, like a bunch of bros and stuff showing up. When you're making the transition, like, oh shit, there's a bunch more women coming to the shows. What do you think changed? Was it the lyrics? Was it the type of music you're playing? Like, how did you start getting a balance of a fan base instead of just a bunch of dudes?
It was the focus on the songwriting and the production and the lyrical content, all of that. I mean, whereas like so, previously it was just straight up, you know, guitar licks basically was the focus.
Yeah. We were really the timing of that Cabaret album. We put that out in early 2012 and that was probably within 6 months or so of Spotify launching. And we had a song on there. It's the first track called Mercury. And I don't know how we got whatever data, but I guess Athens, Georgia, and a lot of the Southeast. I think it was maybe one of the number one trending songs within several SEC markets.
Holy shit.
And yeah, and there's a, you know, and that was kind of one of our first songs where everything, all the instruments cut out and you just hear in and out. And so when we came back to Athens, it was one of the first, we were actually on tour with a Tea Leaf Green.
Oh, and sick.
Yeah, we're opening up for them at the Georgia Theater. Our manager was there side stage watching. And when we played that song, it's just, you could feel something was happening, you know? And like, I think it was because we you know, didn't have our usual wordy chorus. We had a very simple, singable moment. And everyone in there sang it. We're like, okay, we can headline this place when we come back. And we did. And we've sold it out every time since. And it's been, it was this very kind of eye-opening breakthrough really just through Spotify. I mean, I think that was kind of the what really propelled us. And, you know, obviously with Too High getting on the biggest pop playlists, that was huge too. You know, it just kind of gave us a little more global awareness. So yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, but it's also so random at the same time. Yeah. I mean, you can put out a single and think, oh great, they're going to playlist it. And then it just falls completely flat. So it's just, it's a total crapshoot.
Do you still get bummed out when radio doesn't play the single? Now that you had such a big success.
We're more bummed out when we feel like we picked the wrong single. You know, like when you go at the station that you've worked a decade to build a relationship with and, you know, you give them this song that they're like, what is this? This isn't the band. This doesn't sound like them. You know, that really stings. You know, and the Revivalists have done such a great job maintaining their true sound while really just having these amazing songs and they work so well at radio and, you know, hats off to them. And, you know, they're definitely a band that we really look up to that regard for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Same.
Yeah. They're good friends of ours for sure. we did a co-headline tour with them a long time ago with Revivalist a long time ago. And how long ago was that, Wes? Probably like,
that was probably 2014 or 15.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I became really friends with George Conan. And Ed since then.
Yeah.
That's another band that, that we've become good friends with throughout. In fact, saw them the Saturday night before we saw Dirty Heads, which was 2 weeks before we saw you. It's incredible. Different festivals. I love that.
I love that too. And it's also like, that's one thing I missed, you know, it's like, you don't realize the camaraderie there is with the bands that are friends, you know, it's like, oh shit. It's like we had a year and a half without seeing our fucking friends. And the only time we could see our friends is on the road, you know?
Right.
It's heavy. Yeah. What was that? Yeah. Give me that. I want to hear that first. Okay. So that first moment when they're, when everyone's singing your fucking song, did you guys get chills and shit?
Oh yeah. Hell yeah. Oh. I still get chills. I have in-ear monitors now. And whenever we play Morocco, we do a breakdown. Tommy's got a little bass solo and then we let the crowd sing the chorus. I take out my inner monitors every show. I want to hear them. I want to feel like I'm in the crowd.
Yeah.
It's an addictive feeling, and that's, you know, we've got a lot of songs that really have that big chorus kind of thing, All Day All Night, Morocco, Too High. So I really, and that informs a lot of songwriting too. You know, when we had that moment where everything drops out and everyone's singing, it's like, ooh, we should do more of that. You know, it's like simple enough melodies that non-musicians can sing them and, you know, have it just kind of be all encompassing. And, it's informed our songwriting. We've learned a lot from our fans about what works songwriting wise and what doesn't. And I think it's hopefully ideally getting sharper and sharper as we, keep going.
What about you, Tommy?
What was the question again? I got distracted
when your first time hearing like the whole audience, like maybe it's your first time coming into the show and all of a sudden they're singing the fucking songs, dude. It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I love that. I mean, particularly for me, I like to just rock out, you know, rather than the sing along parts. For me, just walking, like the best moment I can, the best example I can give is for a thrill wise was that 2012 Bonnaroo. So I keep going back to it. We came out to a tornado siren. That was our opening sound. Sick. And then we fogged the shit out of it and the crowd was going nuts. And what did we open with, Wes? Was it All the Rage?
Yeah, All the Rage. Rage.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did a long build into this, you know, 2-chord drop for that song, and that was just electrifying for me.
The thing at the time with indie bands was to have a floor tom. The keys player just had to have a floor tom to bang on. So I had my floor tom out there because we were playing Bonnaroo and I wanted to fit in with the indie bands.
So I'm just in this talk.
Boom, boom, boom. Ridiculous. And that was the only time I played it. I like had no use for it otherwise. I may have like tapped on it at one point. It was very bizarre.
Oh, God. Guys, this is amazing. We got to be friends, dude. We are the same personality on this shit. Yeah, I was like, I think about that all the time because I've always wanted to be like a Mumford Band or something when I was like younger in my life and with the floor tom and the kick drum and the fucking, just like all the indie bands are doing it.
Yeah.
And like, you don't want to.
We never got a Glockenspiel though. It never got that far.
Or like we played the little toy instruments.
Yeah, the first indie festival we played was in New Orleans. It was called Faubourg. And we just had this ridiculous, you know, running joke of like, are you going to play a Glockenspiel at Faubourg? Oh, a little ukulele at Faubourg? Yes.
Oh, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Faubourg.
Do you guys play in Europe at all?
We have.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did a nice tour through Germany. And then Norway actually really likes us, is great.
It's amazing. Like, I got a hit in Norway, Blame It on the Pussy. Like, oh, I love Blame It on the Pussy. And I'm like, I can't play that shit in America anymore. Everyone's like, whoa, you got chilled out, Frasco. But Norway's like, oh, Blame It on the Pussy, such a great song. I'm like, thanks, Norway.
Thank you, Norway. Sing it to my daughter.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Guys, this has been amazing. You know, thank you so much for being part of the show. I'm thankful that we're just getting closer and closer. You know, I've always wanted to get close with you guys, and I really felt Memfo was the moment where we connected. So I'm so thankful for your friendship And I'm thankful that you guys keep on fucking kicking ass. You keep it kicking ass. Get on
you
that.
You keep fucking kicking ass too.
Dude, we're in this together.
Andy, let's just fucking all kick everyone's ass.
Hell yeah.
But hey, Andy, seriously, I wanted to say, like, last year, kind of, we were aware of you because of the Fort Lauderdale, Tampa show.
Yeah.
But seeing kind of your rise last year, you were like the egg in the casserole that sort of binded everything together in this scene, and you were a light to so many people. And your show's amazing. Your live show's incredible. What you do is so special. We talk about it all the time.
Thanks.
Very inspiring. Yeah. Very, you know, empowering. It's good shit. We love you. And yes, hopefully we'll tour together one day.
Hell yeah. And Tommy, I'm gonna get you on Stern after party, dude.
You mean me?
Let's do it.
I'll get you. Both
me,
of you.
Me.
Oh,
no,
Wes,
no,
you wanted
no,
that?
No, do me. Do me.
That was me.
Okay, I got both of you. I got both of you. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Stern. Why do you guys love Stern so much?
I'm the Stern guy. I don't know. Tommy's,
oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't dislike.
Wes is addicted.
I mean, I've listened. I'm addicted. Yeah, yeah, I've listened to Stern every day for probably 12 years. And you know, even though, you know, he's working from home and there's all this just kind of weirdness going on at the studio, but I think it's as good as ever. I'm still fascinated by the staff, everything going on there. Ronnie going to Vegas is just hysterical. His house was built backwards. It blows my mind. I love it. I mean, it's just, I love, at first I was really hooked by his interviews. We used to listen to him a lot in the van when we'd be together, and we were driving to Mempho and I was playing the Jagger interview, and it's cool to, you know, share that experience with your band, to hear Stern interview some of your heroes. You know, he's the best interviewer out there. I hope he'll eventually go back to the studio, simply because of just general sound quality. And I think there's just such a synergy when everyone's together. And I just wonder what goes on in that back room, if they're all in just like a lunch room and they're talking about me, get in there, Ronnie, or whatever, you know. It's just such a fun kind of, how I visualize everything going there is just the best part of waking up. It's an amazing show. And, sad to see him go this summer, but, you know, it's also been nice to have him come back and, you know, pretty much work for weeks straight. And, you know, cause I know the guy needs, like we were saying, work balance, work life balance. So
like
I think he's
hit
a sweet spot. Yeah, exactly. So, and I get it. It's like, you know, he's like, shit, I've been doing this for 40 years. I need to give me a break every once in a while. I get it, man. Take the time you need. I mean, when he's on, he's on, you know, and I love what he says about COVID and everything. I don't disagree with anything he says there, and how just passionate he is so spot on and great. So yeah, I'm a Stern mega fan.
He's the Stern guy.
Yeah.
Brandano, if you're listening to this, I know you listen to the podcast, Brandano, get Moon Taxi on the wrap up. That'd
come on,
amazing.
Stevie.
Let's go, Stevie. Guys, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate
it. Thank you,
Andy. I got one last question for you. Okay. When it's all said and done, you know, what do you want to be remembered by?
Tommy?
Shit, that's a very tough question. I guess our incredible live shows.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, or me personally?
Yeah.
I like, you know, we get a lot of messages about from people who, you know, walk down the aisle to Run Right Back, or to be a part of big moments in people's lives, I think is super cool. You know, people, you know, like say that we're, you know, mood booster, flip their, you know, mood around, you know, like that to me, you know, to be able to supply the world with dopamine is a very special job.
Great way to put it.
Yeah, totally.
So
dopamine dealers.
I want to be a dopamine dealer. That's it.
Hell yeah.
Well, it's a great band name.
Well,
wow.
You're doing a great job.
Keep that one.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you let's do a side project. We'll call them dopamine dealers.
Yes, I'm in.
Let's do it. That's awesome. Badass.
Tommy, Wes, thanks for being on the show. I'm thankful for your friendship, and I'm thankful for you guys bringing people joy, and let's do it together soon.
Absolutely.
Take care, Andy.
Love you,
appreciate
boys.
It.
Thanks, guys, so much. Bye. Have a great one. Later. Yeah. There you have it. Moon Taxi. Hell yeah, that was fun. I like to get to know bands, you know, their rise and how they pivot through changing their fucking sound. You know, it's a very scary thing to do, and it takes a lot of fucking balls. So shout out to Moon Taxi. Let's go. My boys, nice work. Nice work. All right, we'll catch you on the tail end.
Now, a message from the UN.
Seen my share of big fake titties. Put my hands on some just last night. Trying to figure out if they're firm or jiggling. Science rules when you're touching boobs. Science rules when you're touching boobs.
Fake titties!
Science rules when you're touching boobs.
All right, and there you have it. Moon Taxi, thanks for being on the show. Those guys are great guys. I really bonded with them. I can't wait to see them again. Hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did to get to know those boys and whatnot. But there it is. Hope you had a great week. Hope you're having fun. Shout out to New Orleans. That was a great show. Little Rock, Arkansas, Fayetteville. You know, you always treat me well, and I'm just thankful that you still come out to the shows and whatnot. But let's have a great week. Let's stay focused on our dreams and on our what makes us happy. And if you don't like something, tell them to fuck off. Or if you don't like something, you could always get out of that situation. You're never stuck in anything. You're never stuck. And if you're kind of stuck, it's okay, because this too shall pass. We're going to get through this depression. We're going to get through this anxiety. You're not alone in the fight. And we're just going to keep fighting it. Keep battling so we could be authentic, appreciate life, and to focus on whatever it is we need to do to stay happy and stay present in the moment. Because at the end of the day, that's all we got. We got our brain who's going to tell us to live in the past and live in the future. We got our friends and our families who are telling us to live in the past or live in the future. But at the end of the day, take a step back and realize this is my life, not anyone else's. So stay focused on trying to make yourself a better person every day and try to make yourself happy every day. That's all we can do. We can try and try and try. So keep trying, and I'll be there rooting you on. Your little Uncle Andy will be rooting you on each step of the way. Once again, we're playing Grand Rapids Tuesday. That's today. We're playing Ferndale, Michigan, Detroit. Where are all my Detroit players at? Jess Thibodeau, my old manager, lives out there. I'm going to have a nice dinner with him. And then Buffalo, New York. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the 21st and 22nd. Damn, 21st. Bo, we're going back to your hometown.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Wear condoms, Bo. And October 23rd, Covington, Kentucky. And October 24th, Cleveland, Ohio. I'll just do that week. Oh, and then next week, because Big Something was on the show, promoting the show. The 28th, we're at Raleigh, North Carolina. We're going to the Big Something Turf. Wilmington, North Carolina with Kyle Ayers and Big Something for the Royal Rumble. The 30th, Richmond, Virginia at the Broadbury. And then the 31st at the Southern in Charlottesville, Virginia. So get out there. Come on. Support the boys. Tickets are looking good at those shows, but let's sell them out. I love when I walk into a venue. It's like, no worry about promoting. We could sell that bitch out. So let's sell those out and whatnot. All right, guys. Love you. Be safe out there. It's a weird world. Don't watch too much television. That'll scare you, like Squid Games and CNN and shit. Just be happy, and let's work on trying to stay in a good mental space so we could take on anything that is and comes our way. Literally, right, Bo? Hell yeah. All right, guys, have a great day.
You tuned in to the World's Safety Podcast with Andy Fresco, now in its fourth season. Thank you for listening to this episode, produced by Andy Fresco, Joe Angelo, and Chris Lawrence. We need you to help us save the world and spread the word. Please subscribe, rate the show, give us those crazy stars, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're picking this shit up. Follow us on Instagram at World Saving Podcast for more info and updates. Fresco's blogs and tour dates you find at andyfresco.com. and check our socials to see what's up next. Might be a video dance party, a showcase concert, that crazy shit show, or whatever springs to Andy's wicked brain. And after a year of keeping clean and playing safe, the band is back on tour. We thank our brand new talent booker, Mara Davis. We thank this week's guest, our co-host, and all the fringy frenzies that help make this show great. Thank you all. And thank you for listening. Be your best, be safe, and we will be back next week.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast as far as we know. Any similarity to actual knowledge, facts, or fake is purely coincidental.